Accession number 3936, reel 1.
Mr. Fleet, reel 1. To start with, could you tell me about your leaving Germany?
Yes.
Why did you finally make the decision to come here?
Very simply, walking in Cologne, I met a member of the political police whom I knew beforehand. He was a member of the Social Democratic Party. And he said, Fleet, you're still here. Don't you know you're on the wanted list? I can even tell you're number 17. And that was a signal.
Why were you number 17 on the list?
Well, that I don't know. I was pretty high, probably, because, or pretty low, because I was not a very important member, but of a rather important anti-Nazi organization.
What sort of activities did that involve?
During the run-up to the election, I was in the country, and in the villages, we spoiled nearly all Nazi meetings by a certain technique, which is well known now by the communists, how they break up meetings. We let the speaker speak first and be quiet, and then we started our discussion. You know, we were invited to speak. And if they were noisy, then we said they shouldn't. We let them speak. And later on, we became noisy and said, all decent people walk out. And that was the Kassel district of Germany. And the Nazi vote there was really lower than anywhere else. It was a jolly good technique because people saw that some people did act against them. We were beaten up once or twice, but not seriously. And I suppose that was the reason why. My wife was out already. She was already in England because she suffered from the anti-Jewish boycott very early in June 1933.
Was it illegal for her? As a Jewish woman, to have a restaurant?
Not illegal. The illegality became only, or the things became only illegal after the Nuremberg laws. No, but it was a boycott. Jude was written on, you know, where there was a Jewish firm and somewhere smashed, and the Nazis stormed into the restaurant and said, this is a Jewish business, and where's the proprietors? And one of our waitress stepped in and said, she is the proprietor. She was tall, blonde, blue-eyed, and she saved the situation by my wife hid. And the next day she said, Walter, whatever you do, I'm going. And we had a standing invitation from the English branch of my family, so she packed two suitcases and off she went just by ordinary train to London.
You also had a little girl, didn't you?
Yes, she was already safely in Switzerland with friends. And I went, after that warning I told you about, I went to Munich, lived illegally there for quite a time until my departure was prepared, and I went over what we call the Green Frontier into Holland, and then I stayed there for a while. It was all organized by the International Confederation of Transport Workers, or International Transport Workers Federation, and because I wanted to enter England legally, of course.
Why is it called the Green Frontier?
Because the system was, I arrived in Aachen with my newspaper on a diagonal position, and I saw somebody else who had the newspapers in the same way, and he said hello to me, and another code word, And he took me to his home. We had a nice coffee. Then I had to empty my pockets and leave the suitcases there, and they took the labels out of our suits and underwear. And then we walked through the green woods and eventually into Holland.
Was the border unguarded?
It was absolutely unguarded then, yes. It was just the beginning. The Nazis were about 4 months in power, 5 months. And then we came to a pub, and we had a meal there. And a few hours later, somebody came with my two suitcases. He smuggled them along on the footplate. Yeah.
Was it expensive to arrange this?
Not a penny. Not a penny. No. This was all done by the international trade union movement. Yes, they kept me in a hostel, in their own hostel, and I had free meals there, everything. Wonderful.
Why did you and your wife choose England?
Well, I told you we had an English branch of the family here, and we had a standing invitation, so we knew immediately where we could go and be welcomed.
Yes, I can see that. But it seems England might have been a bit close to Germany for comfort.
Yes, it became very close later when the war came, you see, but that was still 6 years before the war. And we, like so many English people, we thought that England was invulnerable. There was a channel in between. Invasion was not thought of at that time. No, we felt quite safe here. Except one strange thing, you know, whenever we talked politics in Golders Green, where we lived for the first few months, I saw that the windows were closed and nobody could overhear it. And my uncle always laughed. He said, "You don't need to do that here."
Had your uncle been here for some time?
Oh, yes. The 1850 or 1860, they came over here. He ran the English office of the AEG, the electric, big German electric concern. So that was that, and we were here in England.
This was the end of 1933?
Yeah, exactly. The very end, because I left on the 31st of December and arrived on the 1st of January, 1934.
To what extent did you see a war coming?
Much later only, not then. But we got the reports like everybody else that Germany was rearming in spite of all the Treaty of Versailles conditions, and it was mentioned in Parliament. Churchill got up every so often and said, isn't the government aware of the fact that Germany has now 1,350 aeroplanes? And old Chamberlain got up and said, "We have no official information." And in fact, our relations considered us as warmongers, because we always said, "Why don't they prepare for war? You know, there is a war coming." But nobody believed it. I mean, even Stalin made the pact with Hitler and was attacked later. But they had no idea about the psychology of that man. Well, it's past history.
Did you imagine that you were leaving Germany temporarily?
No,
that
no.
Hitler
no.
was a short-term.
No, 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 no. No, we know that's for good. No, and we both were terribly anti-German at that time. I mean, that these things could happen in Germany. We even arranged between my wife and I that we wouldn't speak German to each other. We would speak English. And what an English it was. Except when we had a row, then we started using a few very, very forceful German expressions. But not willingly.
How well did you speak English?
Well, I had school English, which was horrible. The pronunciation all wrong. And my wife spoke no English at all, but she picked it up much better than I did because I was already so much versed in the old-fashioned one.
You had been a chemical engineer.
That's right.
You said, in Germany.
Yeah.
Did you try to continue with that when you came?
No. First of all, we were just at the end of the big recession here. There was no job to be had even for English chemical engineers. And my English wasn't good enough for this. And then even in Germany, I was out of it for a while. I was unemployed for a time and did some other things. So I never tried. But as my wife was a good cook and had already two vegetarian restaurants in Cologne, so we decided right from the beginning to join forces, and I would help her to build up a vegetarian restaurant, which we did. Opened on the 6th of March, 1934.
That's very quick.
Yes, because she was here for almost three quarters of a year before, and she prepared the ground. She had already some premises in view, and she sneaked by ever so often to see whether the to-let sign was still on. And we were very lucky there. Very lucky indeed.
It must have been a slightly bad time to start a restaurant.
No.
Economically, the country wasn't in a very good state.
No, but you see, people have to eat. It was hard at the beginning because the conditions the Home Office set us was that we should put no English person out of work, which was a bit difficult to prove. But eventually we got the permission, and it was difficult at the beginning. Every small restaurant is very hard work. Later, when we got bigger, it was easier. And the first half year was indeed touch and go. We never knew whether we would be able to pay the wages at the end of the week. But eventually it went better. Suddenly the tables turned, we became fashionable even, and all the old Vic people and the Shakespeare Company people came. And that was the end of our financial worries. And when we enlarged twice, in fact, it became much easier for my wife and for myself. We had to work in two shifts because it was a very long day from morning coffee until dinner at night. We worked in two shifts, and sometimes either Jenny or myself had to work through two shifts, and it was pretty hard. But it was, as I said, very successful.
So you were already thriving by the time the war came?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Very thriving. And we made very interesting contacts then. One was, which may be important for the story later, was the secretary of the cabinet, Downing Street, 10 Downing Street, Sir Maurice Henke at the time. We became very friendly, but he couldn't help what happened later.
It must have been rather a shock then when the war came and you'd settled in nicely here, you had a successful business, and then you suddenly had to be an enemy alien.
That was not so bad, really. We had the first tribunal was held where every enemy alien was interviewed briefly, really, and we were classified in A, B, and C classes. A, the pro-Nazis, known Nazis, and known communists, because communists and Nazis were still then one. And then the doubtful cases, the au pair girls and tourists and so on, and C cases, known anti-Nazis. And the restrictions were formal. They were not really. We had to be at home at 12 o'clock night time, and we were not allowed to have wireless sets, but we couldn't listen to our friends' wireless sets, so this was a formality. And mind you, public opinion had to be satisfied that something had to be done. And then the real shock came when Holland and Belgium were occupied, and it was clear that there was a fifth column.
Yes. Did the public turn against your restaurant?
Not a bit. Not a bit. Not a bit. No, we were. We had even people from the German embassy eating, but of course not the top people, but those who were at the embassy before the Nazis, and they told us the latest Hitler jokes. And as I said, Sir Maurice Henke, and no, on the contrary, they commiserated with us. No, on the contrary, we had every support I could imagine. Friendliness and fairness from all sides. And this was one of the reasons why the second tribunal, when we were eventually interned, was such a terrible shock to me and to my wife. We didn't expect that, because that whole second tribunal, which was installed because of the fifth column, and there was an outcry, public outcry, where is our fifth column? What are we doing? What have we been doing against the fifth column being established in this country? And they had to do something. And on Heinz's thought, afterwards, I think we were just the victim of a huge governmental public relation exercise. They had to show so many are interned today, so many on yesterday, and so on. And the chairman of the tribunal probably had orders, intern as many as you can. And that was exactly how the tribunal was. It was a huge farce from beginning to end.
Where was it held?
Bow Street Police Station, or Bow Street Court. The tribunal was a chairman, I forgot his name now, and about four or five others on the bench.
Magistrates?
No, I don't know. They may be a justice of the peace, which were also sitting on other benches. They may be, yes. And we were questioned, and I was questioned, you know, how much we earn in the restaurant, what we do with the money, and so on and so on. And then I was asked whether I am a member of the Society for the Furtherance of Critical Philosophy, which I was. That was the German continuation of the Kant Gesellschaft. And then he asked me whether I know anything about the philosophy, and I told him what I knew, and he said, it sounds all rubbish to me, but maybe good philosophy. And that was that, interned. My brother was asked, are you a pacifist? And he said, yes, I'm very pacifistic, but not if it goes against Hitler, interned. One of the girls was asked, do you work at the Vega? What is your wages? So and so much. What are you doing with the money? You get your meals free? Yes, I get my meals free. So you must save something. Yes, I do save some. Where do you keep your money? In my handbag here, interned. But we learned much, much later that one of the members of the bench went to him later and said, look here, you can't intern these people on this evidence. And he just said to her, mind your own business. Later, I mean, the whole thing was such a shock to me, I couldn't understand it. And the farcicality of it, if there's a word like farcicality, I don't know, was that I thought now we would go into prison or something. No, we could go home again. And we were told we should report, that was on a Wednesday, we were told we should report for internment on the Saturday. So we had still the Thursday and Friday to arrange our things. I went to my bank. Could we still withdraw money? Sure, I said, you can withdraw everything. So if we were really spies or dangerous, we could have absconded without the slightest difficulty. But obedient citizens as we were, we reported on a Saturday at Bow Street Police Station again. And then we were first in the hands of the police. They were very nice to us. We were put into cells, of course, and got a nice cup of tea and biscuits. And then we were taken over by the military.
This is in June 1940.
Yes, I can give you the dates. The tribunal was held on the Wednesday, the 19th of June, 1940, yes. And we reported on the 22nd of June.
How much information did you have about what you should take with you and where you were going?
Well, we were allowed, I think, £80, which was quite a lot, you know. So we put an extra suit. And no, they just said we would be interned and we should take the necessary things along. We could take what we liked. No cameras. I don't know what else. We were searched, all right. All the things were taken away from us. What we had in our pockets, all the money was taken away, but we got a receipt for everything. It was done all properly. Not very pleasant.
What happened about the restaurant?
Well, the 2 days were very hectic, you can imagine. My brother and I, we wanted to sell the place and buy a boat and go to America. Friends of us strongly disapproved of the idea, and they said, we run the business. And we appointed our manageress as a director and a friend of mine as a director. And the rest, they managed marvelously. They were loyal. You can't imagine. But of course, we learned of this only later when we came back.
Were they English?
Most of them, yes. Cockneys, mostly. Wonderful people.
Though, in addition to you and your wife,
my brother and his wife. My brother
were. Five other people from the restaurant were taken.
Yeah, that's right. My brother and his wife, two non-Jewish refugees who came from the same political organization where I was a member, and a girl also from the same organization. And at Bow Street Police Station, we were separated from our wives, and also the married people were separated from the non-married ones, which was for me a good sign because I hoped to get reunited with my wife then. But we had to say farewell to our other friends. And from then on, until 17 months later, we were always guarded by some soldiers with a fixed bayonet or were behind barbed wire.
What happened about your daughter when you and your wife? Well,
she stayed with friends in Switzerland first. Oh no, then she came back and stayed with our housekeeper, English housekeeper.
In Richmond.
In Richmond, that's right. Yes. And one day they wanted to go back to their house, and the police said they can't. There was a time bomb in there. They should go back, and they slept at the Vega. This was a proper shelter. Bomb shelter then. And when they came the next day, the house wasn't there anymore. But this is all small things against what happened otherwise.
Why were all the Germans working at the Vega not interned?
Well, there was only one more German who wasn't interned, and she was too young. She was 15 or 16. She was an apprentice. All the others were not English. Well, not German.
Said you were first taken to Kempton Park.
That's right. Only for a few days.
What sort of accommodation did you have there at the race
course? Oh, well, we had mattresses on the floor, very quite comfortable, but nothing to eat. Yeah. As a vegetarian, I went round and had dandelion leaves. It was a good salad. The French make a salad of it. With a very naughty name. You know the French name? Pissenlit, written in one word, but that's by the way.
So then after you were sorted out there, you were taken to Douglas in the Isle of Man.
Only a few days then, and we volunteered. We were asked who wants to go to Canada. And we volunteered because we learned through the grapevine that we would be taken to Canada, and our wives as well, and there we would be reunited.
You said you learned through the grapevine. You mean you were not told officially?
That we could join our wives? I'm not sure. It may have been said that we perhaps saw something. Anyhow, we learned much later that Sir Maurice Henke, of whom I told you, couldn't do anything about it, but he pleaded very hard with the government that the anti-Nazis should be sent to Canada together with their wives so they can live a fairly free life there, and they would be safe in case the invasion came. Because we wouldn't have a nice time then.
No, I think that was a great fear of the people who were interned here during the war.
Yes.
Obviously.
So we were well out of it, except my wife never went to Canada. She
stayed. Had she been told that she could volunteer for Canada?
No. No. There was no woman transport to Canada.
No.
To anywhere.
But she might have been told that.
No, she wasn't.
Was there a certain amount of pressure on you to
volunteer? No. Not at all. No, on the contrary, there was pressure by non-married people who were also afraid of the Nazis and wanted to come with us. And some did. For instance, the two men who worked at the Vega with me, I saw them again on the ship later.
Could you tell me about the guards at Kempton Park? Douglas, Isle of Man.
Nothing special. You had all types. You had the talkative type, the taciturn type, the people who offered us cigarettes, and the other one, and some who bullied us. It's just human nature. Nothing special. We didn't mind.
Were they regular soldiers?
I think so. Anyhow, they had guns and fixed bayonets. I don't think Dad's army had at that time.
Did they realize who you were? I mean, that
you were
Nazi refugees,
or did they be told
these are Nazis?
Vaguely. No, they were told we are enemy aliens, which we were. And they couldn't say anything else because we still were not sorted out. I was very doubtful of some of my communist fellow internees. I thought they may become very dangerous because they knew all the tricks. No complaint there.
So this brings us up to the 10th of July, 1940.
Yes, that's when we were asked early in the morning to get ready for embarkation, which we did. Again, we could take our luggage with us, as much as we could carry. And we were searched, of course, properly, that we had nothing dangerous with us to endanger the ship.